Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, into the 9 o'clock hour we go. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. CJ, subtle message that's gotten a lot of reaction on our text page today when we played it earlier. If you're the 9 o'clock crowd may not have been here earlier. Here was CJ on the McAfee show yesterday. This is, I think, a subtle message to those of you that attend the home games here at NRG Stadium.
How's the crowd's been? Crowd's been insane?
Yeah, it's been cool. Last game was like a playoff game. It was pretty nice. And, you know, it's 12 o'clock games a little different in Houston is because, you know, there's a lot to do out here. So we really don't get nobody until like first quarter. But the people who come early, thank you. Appreciate it. But it's all love, though. Like, it's been loud, though. It's been really loud. Like, the Bears game was amazing. Felt like a playoff game. Last game felt like a playoff game. So, you know, it's up on the uprise.
Yeah, there's a lot to do down there in Houston. That's why what you were able to do as a rookie down there without being distracted is insane.
Yeah, it's really not that insane. CJ's kind of a homebody.
There's, yeah, the whole thing about it is, yeah, there's a lot to do in Houston. Is there that much to do on a Sunday morning other than church?
Well, yeah.
Right.
There's very few people. Like, the whole – there's, and I get what CJ's doing. He's being nice about this. He would
like it if everybody
were in their seats. So he's just using it as sort of a, you know – there's a lot to do here. He's giving you guys a pass is what he's doing for not being in your seats early. But the whole – I'm with you, Seth. Like, the whole, like, there's a lot to do in Houston. Like, there's a lot to do in Houston is the excuse for missing the game entirely. Like, yeah, we decided to go to NASA or we went to Galveston. Like, a lot to do in Houston doesn't mean, like, why were you late? We were at the Museum of Natural Science. We got there just in time for the middle of the first quarter. You know what I mean? Like,
they're having the bodies exhibit again, you know, with all the dead people that have the physiology on there and everything.
Yeah, man. We were at the funeral museum, and we just barely made it for the second quarter. Like, it's a lot to do in Houston doesn't...
Rothko Chapel was just renovated. Yeah.
No, people like drinking and eating in the parking lot, one, and they don't like waiting in lines, two. I think those are the big things. Yeah.
The one of the culprits people had pointed out was security. I don't know about... It doesn't seem like the security at NRG is any different than in any other stadium. Like, that's just... there's going to be lines. There's a lot of people all going in all at once. Yeah. I think part of that might be because, look... you've got a traditionally late arriving crowd that's trying to change their ways, but they're still pushing it. So, you know, an hour before the game, or at least like when we walked in, there was a huge line, 20 minutes before the game to get into the gates as we finished up our pregame show last week. So I think people are making the effort, and it did feel like it was more full early in the game.
Definitely more
than
full.
Usual.
More
I think we're making progress on this. We're just going to keep chipping away at it.
Yeah, trending in the right direction for sure. I think too.
I think one of the listeners pointing out that maybe they could let people into the tailgate an hour early, do it at 7 a.m. instead of 8 a.m.
Yeah.
Maybe that would make all the difference in the world.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I think that one, and of course the counterpoint somebody had to that was, yeah, that's cool. They get to drink an hour longer before the game. That won't result in any incidents inside the stadium. It's like, I don't know.
There's going to be incidents.
There's going to be.
That's not my goal here. My goal is, don't tell me about the byproducts. I'm looking for the fuel, baby.
Yeah, I'm telling you, the goal is just to get people in the building sooner. That's just the goal. Your stated mission is we want people in their seats by noon. You do a little happy hour pricing on some of the alcohol inside the stadium from 9:30 until 11:30. You'll get people in there. You'll get more people in there than normal, I think.
They had happy hour pricing or just some kind of, I don't know, maybe whatever, do like a special signature drink for that day or something.
Something
exciting to get in there for.
Yeah, for sure.
Free face painting for the kids. I don't know.
We had a few people point this out, and you pointed out this, you know, kind of the difference in time zones. Like, getting in at 1 o'clock to a game is just... it's easier than getting in by noon for a game.
It feels like
Sunday
it shouldn't
morning.
Be a big deal, and yet it is.
Well,
I've lived in both worlds. There's just a difference between 1 p.m. and 12 p.m. It feels much bigger than just 1 hour.
There are where it's a big deal for people, apparently, from some of the people I've seen weighing in, is people that do still go to church on Sunday morning and then go to the Texan game. That's a big hour.
Turnaround.
That's a big hour, you know, is having to get there at 1 o'clock versus having to get there at noon here in the central time zone. You
that's
know?
On your selfish congregation, frankly. Like, they can't get their butts out of bed a little bit earlier
right.
to go to church.
Right.
You know? Just like, do they have their priorities in order here?
Bring that up.
They do.
Bring it up with them at your next church meeting, listeners. Okay.
The various. Yes. Yes. Bring that up. Like, hey, you know, maybe during home games, we just get here. Get here a little earlier, you know?
I would say there are sometimes churches that you go to where the pastor or the minister or the priest, they do drop in a little prayer for the local team, you know, like, hey, today, mm-hmm. you know, they do it. It's a little tongue-in-cheek or serious. Who knows? I mean, it happened a lot where I went to college. They would definitely pray.
It all depends on probably whether that minister is gambling on the game or not.
There's that, too. I don't know necessarily the reasons why they would do that, but if you do have a pastor or a minister that does that, I think they would be open to maybe being flexible with the start times to the services to get you to the game a little bit earlier, you know? Clearly football's on their radar.
I want to go to one of these cowboy churches that they have. There's one on the way up to Nacogdoches, or like up past between Nacogdoches and Texarkana, that is like I drive past it all the time, and it's just like a huge pavilion. It's called a cowboy church.
Yeah,
I know. And I have no idea what it means, but I want to go. I just feel like I might be a little bit out of place in my hocus. That
you gotta dress the part, man. If you're going to a cowboy church,
I'll go in Under Armour and hokas. That's my cowboy gear, damn it.
Okay, well, you at least need to sing when they do their hymns and things like that. All
oh,
right?
Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah. That's my favorite part of church is the singing.
CJ was asked by McAfee. We saw the play to Nico, the 67-yard touchdown pass, and then the camera zooms in on CJ, and he just turns almost like he knows where the camera is. You know what I mean? He knows where the fourth wall is. Turns, folded arms. Just no, you know, just a stone cold reaction. Just like not even jumping around. Here was McAfee asking him about that celebration.
You're still finding deep shots. I mean, you had one of the coldest celebrations this last weekend. I mean, this ball obviously in a bucket, but then the hands crossed, arms crossed, Todd. That's one of the coldest reactions I've seen in some time. We knew we were doing this. If the next shot or just in the moment felt like this was the right reaction.
I feel like it was just the right reaction. It was kind of just I didn't plan on it, but I kind of did something similar last year. But just reminding myself and remind everybody it's regular. You mess up, you give me the shot, I'm going to take it, and I'm going to just make you pay. So, I often just have to remind myself, too, like, I'm still that guy. I can still play this game at a very, very high level. So, I think that was just, like, one of those moments, like, yeah, like, it's like that. So,
I had to remind everybody.
I'm not always that way.
I had to remind everybody this is regular. That is an awesome response.
I'm fighting off the middle-agedom here on this one.
Yeah, you're about to sound old.
Fighting.
I can tell.
I'm about to sound like Colin Cowherd.
You got an old guy look. You got an old guy look on your face.
This is how strokes happen, Sean. I'm fighting it off. The 49 going on 68.
You're not a fan of the arms folded celebration.
I don't like quarterbacks striking a pose.
Oh,
I don't.
There it is.
Strike a pose.
I can imagine if he did the hands above the head, hands on the side, like Madonna. That would be great.
I don't know. I felt it, and I was like, yep, there it is. There it is. You're just a grumpy old codger, aren't you, Seth?
He did that. He did the last time I remember him doing that was the play to Tank in, I think, the Cardinals game, where CJ broke the pocket. He rolled to his right, and he kind of motioned Tank, like, hey, go deep, go deep, go deep. And Tank made that catch where he jumped up and caught it, and then CJ just turned and folded his arms, and I'm like, man, that's badass, because I want to connect with the 25-year-olds, man. I don't know what Seth thinks about this, but I think it's badass.
Sean's going to claim that he thinks it's badass.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kids, I thought it was the greatest moment of the game on Sunday. I don't know about you.
I need you to remain stone-faced and focused on the next series, damn it.
Texans are this fun young team.
Okay, never mind. I hate the arms folded. Sorry.
No,
that's
what
I gotta sound like.
It honestly, it caught me by surprise a little bit that I was kind of like, I don't know if I like that. But I don't. I think it's a little bit of PTSD from Deshaun.
Maybe.
I think it was almost like a little bit of like I have all every now and then. I see the word legend or legendary, yeah. and I'm like, ah, yeah. oh, now, I need to talk to a counselor about this.
If I'm being serious about this. If CJ were to throw a touchdown pass like that and his reaction is to go down to one knee and start strumming the air guitar, I would I would request an intervention. I would go to
see,
his.
That wasn't an old man thing. That was like a cheese alert.
It was,
the fact that
it was
the Rock Boys thing was annoying. Yeah.
Yes, it was a faction that didn't deserve to be a faction, and then the quarterback jumps in on it. Like, Deshaun, you're supposed to be above this kind of stuff.
The know? Rock Boys thing was annoying, and also the cosplay was the all time worst.
The linebackers
coming in doing cosplay, dressed up like various. The video game characters and everything. That was embarrassing. That was just embarrassing.
That was bad. Here's CJ Stroud, actual football take. Feelings on the Texans offense so far this season.
Hey, listen, that can't be happening against Indianapolis anymore. You hear me? That's one of the nicest throws of all time. And you say, like, I have to remind people this is regular. Is there throws or is there moments in games where after something happens, you go, damn, I can't believe that happened? Is there anything that surprises you anymore, or do you have full confidence in everything you're doing?
I would say I have full confidence. You know, I'm very humble at the same time, but I know what I can do on the field. I know that there's no defense for the perfect throw. So I just really, it's just, you know, you got to just be able to focus in those moments. I seen you and Tyrese over there going crazy. So, you know, I had to hush y'all boys. I was trying to look at y'all after. I think y'all left. Y'all beat the traffic.
Okay. All right. Whoa. These tight streets down there.
I'm trying to find you.
They're no different than Mark Wahlberg leaving the Super Bowl early in Houston, remember? Marky Mark was, remember Marky Mark bailed?
Yeah.
When the Patriots were down in the Super Bowl?
Yep. Took his kid with him and went home. And
so McAfee left early.
He left early. Well, he left. It's funny, because if we had kept playing that right after McAfee's like, yeah, you know, sometimes I actually had a meeting. We had to do a meet and greet after the game. It's weird. Yeah. The last two Texan games, the meet and greets happened much earlier than he was pretty funny about it, actually. But
how about, you know what the thing about McAfee is? All right. How's that play in Indy, I wonder, when he just like butters up these Texans players so much, like CJ, about how awesome he is and how much it sucks that they're going to be so good for so long. It feels a little bit like, do you remember this is kids, if you've never seen this movie, it's awesome. Pumping Iron. It was Pumping Iron was a documentary about Arnold Schwarzenegger back when he was a bodybuilder, before he was a successful actor.
Or the governor of California.
He had done like a couple of B movies up to that point. It was before Conan the Barbarian and all that. So, but it was this first, it was this documentary about this bodybuilder, which was a super niche sport at that time. Yeah. But they followed Arnold Schwarzenegger around, and it was crazy. You could see how charismatic he was. It's really interesting to just watch how freaking cocky this guy was.
Yeah.
But there's one of the big storylines in this was Lou Ferrigno was this up-and-coming bodybuilder who was going to, you know, try to take on Arnold Schwarzenegger. And Ferrigno had a dad who was just super... the motivational father, like keeping after his son, yelling at him while he's working out and everything. And the whole time in the beginning of the movie, they're showing Lou Ferrigno's dad basically like, you're going to beat him. You're going to take him on. He's nothing. Then when they first all meet at the Mr. Universe competition and Lou Ferrigno and his dad see Arnold face to face, all of a sudden, Ferrigno's dad is like, oh, Arnold, you're the best. Oh, you're the best. You're incredible. Incredible. Nobody's ever done what you've done. Oh, my gosh. Unbelievable how good you are. I mean, like, Ferrigno must have been like, thanks a lot, Dad.
So is Ferrigno the Indianapolis Colts fan base?
Yes.
Where they feel a little betrayed.
Except the better speaker.
Right. Yeah. We had Ferrigno up in studio one time, me and Ted and Rich. He was awesome.
He's an interesting dude.
Really? And he went on to become the Incredible Hulk on TV. It's probably what he's most famous for. He was great. He was really cool.
So I feel like he's a little bit like Ferrigno's dad.
Yeah.
He's talking all this smack about the Texans and everything, and as soon as CJ Stroud shows up, it's like, oh, you're the best. Nobody's ever going to beat you, CJ Stroud.
So that would be like if JJ Watt, let's say JJ Watt had his own national show. I'm not comparing McAfee to Watt as players, but I'm comparing them as personalities associated with one team. Like if JJ were to bring on, you know, guys from the Colts or the Titans, let's say JJ got like Will Levis on or something like that, and all of a sudden he's buttering up. Yeah, you're right.
It's tough. The only thing it would be if he was interviewing Peyton Manning, and then it's tough because there's always that dynamic of like, all right, Peyton Manning had the Texans number forever and ever.
Yeah, he's really good.
So there's only so much smack you can talk, you know? You just got to acknowledge that, like, yeah, he beat the snot out of us a lot.
Let's play one more here, Stroud and McAfee. McAfee, this is the end of the interview, totally breaking balls on CJ about his advice he gave to Caleb, unsolicited advice he gave to Caleb Williams after the win over the Bears.
What do you got the rest of the day?
Man, I'm about to chill, watch movies, just try to get my mind off the game for a little bit. It's cool.
You going to text Caleb Williams? You know, you talk about... All right, okay. You're the man. Yeah. You're the man. Have you guys talked since then?
No. You know, I wish him... Like, he balled out last week. I'm happy for him, man. That's dope. Seems like he's getting his niche and his groove.
Hell yeah. Happy to hear that. Ladies and gentlemen, a man who's going to be up for MVPs every single year from now until seemingly 2040. Ladies and gentlemen, CJ Stroud. Thank you, man.
Yeah, CJ. All right, CJ.
I haven't talked to Caleb, he says.
No. A lot going on. And Caleb's balling. So Caleb's figured it out up there, which is what Caleb wants.
Okay, we're good. We got enough of McAfee. CJ number two on the MVP odds board, by the way, right now. Mahomes.
Who's number one?
Mahomes.
Oh, Mahomes. Okay.
Yeah, Mahomes number one, CJ number two. So
was Allen ever number one? I said that earlier, and then I realized, like, wait, was that just Josh Allen?
He may have been. I know he was number one in some of the QB power rankings that guys do and things like that. But he might have bumped up to number one. I think he's down to like four now or so. It's the same four or five guys, and probably will be, especially because they all play each other at some point here. But it's Mahomes, CJ, Allen. Burrow's record probably isn't good enough now to be in the mix. Darnold is like fifth right now on the odds board for MVP. Darnold's having a hell of a year, man. Sam Darnold. Can't talk about his fat face, man. He's putting up numbers.
The Jets, some of the teams that the Texans will play that still have really good defenses, you know, the Jets, they already played the Bears. The Chiefs have a really good defense, like as always.
Ravens.
I think that there's not necessarily a spot other than within the AFC South where I'd say, all right, statistically, some of these things will start to stack up.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is that the Texans just have to figure a few things out offensively.
They got to play better.
They're doing some things well, but they're just not scoring enough points.
That's right.
And they flat out got to tie the run game in more effectively. They got to be better on first and second down. You just can't have CJ playing hero ball on third and long all the time and expect to really become what that I think they're capable of being.
Should the Texans be making a phone call to the recently ousted Robert Saleh? We'll discuss that. Saleh put a statement out. We'll see how he did in terms of his how he followed up on his getting fired yesterday. Shocked that he was fired yesterday. We'll get to that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Robert Saleh out in New York. That came down literally about 24 hours ago is when it came down yesterday. Reportedly, Robert Saleh was shocked. He had a staff meeting that morning to tell his staff that he was going to be, according to reports, demoting Nathaniel Hackett, offensive coordinator, and taking play-calling duties away from him and giving them to Todd Downing. So he told his staff this, and then he gets a call, hey, the owner wants to meet with you. And then next thing you know, he's getting walked out to his car by security. He's not even
at
lunch.
The one?
Lunchtime yet, and the guy's, he's gonzo. Yeah.
That was the part that I was a little confused on some of the reporting was the actual timing of all of that, whether he had actually informed everybody of that move yet or if he was... Or if that was what he was planning on doing.
The reports I saw was he had a staff meeting and he told the staff that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. The fact that they are, as of right now, a middling NFL team. They're middling mostly because their defense has bailed them out of just being an atrocious team.
Yeah.
So that's the huge question and the oddity is just that, okay, usually guys who are coaching a team like the Jets don't get fired this early in the season unless there's something. And because people keep texting this in, I don't believe for a second that it was because he was wearing his Lebanon flag. It was the International Heritage Week. He wore the same flag. Like, coaches are encouraged to, like, show off any of their heritage or whatever like that, any international stuff on that day. And he did the same thing last year. That wasn't like it was a huge surprise or anything.
Yep.
And he's Lebanese. So, yeah, it's not like he just randomly was making a political statement or something like
that. He's not Robert McSala from Ireland.
Yeah.
He has Lebanese flag on.
So, yeah, I don't, there's, unless I see a memo or something, I highly, highly doubt that that was it. I think the fact that he was going to demote Aaron Rodgers' best bud.
Yeah.
And the guy that nobody can quite figure out why he's an offensive coordinator in the NFL other than he's best buds with Aaron Rodgers. That's where the dots are being connected.
Yeah, to me, the biggest questions, Seth, that I don't know what kind of answers we're going to get. And Aaron Rodgers is scheduled to do his hit with Pat McAfee today. I would guess Aaron Rodgers is probably scheduled to meet with the media today too, given that he's the quarterback of the New York Jets and that the quarterback is one of the scheduled, it's a mandatory press conference every week that the starting quarterback do media. So we'll hear from Aaron Rodgers within the next several hours, one way or the other on all this. Obviously everybody's got questions as to how involved he was in this. The owner, if Aaron Rodgers was involved at all in this decision, the owner is taking the bullet for this one. Woody Johnson saying, nope, this is my decision. The question I think a lot of people had in the building, and I saw some reports of this, Connor, I forget his last name, Connor Hughes maybe, covers the Jets up there, said he talked to a few of the players, and the overriding question they have is, okay, you fired Robert Saleh, how does this solve our problems on offense?
Right.
What got solved by doing this?
Of all the things, and then you promoted the defensive coordinator to head coach. So, yeah, what exactly are we going to do that? And maybe, who knows what goes on behind the scenes and whatever drama there might be that'll seep out. The nice thing about it being New York is that it probably will seep out.
Oh, yes.
Whatever, you know, dirty laundry there might be. But it's just been rough for Robert Saleh because, you know, he's trying to establish a certain culture and do things as a head coach, but it feels like the organization is all in on giving Aaron Rodgers anything and everything he wants and to operate the way Aaron Rodgers wants to the point where your franchise quarterback is skipping mandatory activities in the offseason because he's got a vacation he wants to get to. And Saleh gets criticized for not handling that the right way.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of messed up dysfunctional stuff is that? And you know what happens when you're in dysfunctional relationships. You start bending over backwards to try to say things the right way in such a way that you don't offend whoever the actual problem is, right? You spend all this extra energy and time trying to avoid, you know, disrupting the peace and calm because you got one whack job in the organization. And it feels like people are blaming Robert Saleh for not being good enough at handling the dysfunction that he didn't create, which is you got, great, Aaron Rodgers potentially could do great things for your organization, but you're allowing him to handpick an offensive coordinator who sucks. You've got wide receivers on your team that are there just because they like Aaron Rodgers, and the offense just isn't getting it done.
Yeah. Should the Houston Texans be placing a call to Robert Saleh, either in season or after the season?
I think after the season, you know, or now maybe during the season, depending on what Saleh wants to do. It's pretty rare that a head coach, they're probably usually banned by contract. They do it. They make phone calls. They chat.
Yeah.
They take, you know, they're a resource to other people. That before the Jets game, especially, yeah. DeMeco and Robert Saleh probably have a conversation.
They will talk. Yeah.
I would imagine.
Yeah. Does this, this has to make it more likely that the Jets go all in to get Devontae Adams, right? I mean, you're firing Robert Saleh in a weird way is an all-in move to cater to Aaron Rodgers. You know what I mean? Like, normally if you fire a coach, you'd be like, all right, well, this is a team that's probably going to start to tear things down, maybe start to sell off some things. You got Aaron Rodgers, who's 40 years old, who's clearly running things in the building to some degree. Why stop here? You know, like, this has to make it more likely, in my opinion, that they go and make a real big push to get Devontae Adams if they weren't going to do it already. You know, they were probably already.
Yeah, I know. Maybe, but that would be interesting, too. Was there any kind of hesitancy or objection by Robert Saleh and going after Devontae Adams?
Right.
Is it as simple as that? It might. Now, and remember, too, because this happens. This could have been something that was done with Aaron Rodgers in mind, but never talked about with Aaron Rodgers. Again, when you're trying to figure out, like, okay, how do we please the diva? Like, how do we keep the diva happy? Think about the old Soviet Union, all the Stalin's advisors kind of scurrying around behind the scenes. We're like, okay, how do we keep our families from getting sent to the gulag? We gotta do this, we gotta do that. So there's any number of scenarios that could have been like, okay, we gotta do this because it's clear that Aaron and Robert don't see eye to eye, but we're not gonna talk to Aaron about it. We just feel like this would be the right situation for Aaron. You have no way of knowing exactly whether Aaron actually talked about it with anybody.
Aaron, I'm looking at his contract situation. He's under contract through next season, through 2025, when he'll be 42 years old. Mm-hmm. And he looks old this season so far. There's no doubt. He looks older than he looked before the Achilles injury. He's not moving as well.
He's looked like a guy, since his last year in Green Bay, he's looked like a guy who recently got divorced and is not handling living on his own well.
Yes.
Like, he just looks aged.
Yes.
Yeah. He looks kind of beaten down and like he's smoking too many cigarettes.
It's not a Deshaun situation with Aaron Rodgers in terms of the financial commitment, the financial damage you can do if you decide to move on from him. But it ain't cheap either. I mean, they have four voidable years attached to this contract right now.
Like, how much dead money is it if they were to move on from him
after this year, the dead cap hit is $50 million, which is weird. I'm like, well, that doesn't sound like very much. That's because you have Russell Wilson, or I'm saying you, like me, you have Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson on your brain. You know what I mean? Like, 50 yeah. million's a lot. Before Russell Wilson, this would have been the most ever in terms
but
of
they've done rate. How much was Matt Ryan's dead money? It was a lot.
40
right?
million. Yeah, 40,
40 million.
Million.
Yeah.
John Lopez.
What? Oh, John Lopez is in the
Nico Collins, what?
Nico what? Collins to the IR.
Oh,
no! Oh!
Ah! Well, thanks for coming in and telling us that, John. Nico Collins to the IR. The one thing I said after the injury, I'm like, we got to keep an eye on. Does he go to injured reserve? That's bad news, man.
I will forever blame John Lopez.
That is bad news. Yeah, the bearer of bad news. I can't wait till John gets back in here in 20 minutes so I can slap him across the face for bringing that
in. Thank you, John, for stepping in and telling us that.
No, that was good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
I'm sure there's probably a million texts on the text line right now. All right. Okay, well, here we are.
Yeah, let's bounce here. What does this look like now? So this is Nico Collins. He's going to be out for at least four games. So let's take a look at the schedule. And what does this mean in terms of the potential severity of it for a guy who is on his way to a career year? Nico Collins to the injury reserve. We'll break that down for you coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
First down Texans to begin this possession at the Houston 33. Stroud fakes the toss. He has time in the pocket. He's going to gun it long. And Nico Collins is there at the 15, 10, 5. Rock and roll. Touchdown. H-Town. A bomb from Stroud to Collins.
All right, that was fun in the moment, man. Put the Texans up 14-3 in that game. Unfortunately, what we did not know at the time was that on that play, Nico Collins pulled a hamstring. He went into the blue tent. He was in there for a long, long time. Came out, hamstring injury, misses the rest of the game. There'd been reports after the game that it's not too bad. Maybe could be back pretty soon. DeMeco Ryans was not as optimistic, it seemed, on Monday when he said these things could take a couple of weeks. We say all that to say that the news that just came down within the last 5 minutes or so, thanks to the dozens of you who texted in notifying us, and thanks to John Lopez for coming in the studio and letting us know, Nico Collins going to the injured reserve. And
yeah.
and just so people know what administratively that means, he's gone for at least the next four games before he can come back.
The thing I'd worry about with a hamstring going to IR is that, all right, hamstrings are notoriously finicky when they're a muscle strain or injury. Sometimes it's a ligament a tendon that's the issue. So who knows whether it's a tendon issue or not. You know, like your hamstring attaches to the pelvis with three different tendons.
Okay.
And sometimes you can have like one rupture or some kind of a partial tear of one of those, but still operate all right. I mean, there's you can get an actual tear in the muscle itself that you can actually see on imaging. So I don't know. There's degrees of severity for what it could be. So at this point, who knows? Maybe this is season-ending IR or ultimately, but I have no way. There's just no way to know how bad it is.
Yeah, in the moment. He didn't even look like he got injured unless you told me he had a hamstring injury and you go back and rewatch it and you're like, okay, I can see kind of right there where he pulls up a little bit, but he's out there dapping his teammates up and things like that. He's on the sideline in the game. You've torn your hamstring off your pelvis before, so you know way more.
Right.
You know way more about this than I do. If I'm just like the layperson reading Nico scoring that touchdown, I'm like, okay, there's no way he's out for the year with
there's
this.
There's some.
Right?
I tore two of the three tendons off the pelvis.
Yeah.
And I could walk just fine afterwards. And I didn't think, okay. I went in the next day thinking like, all right, well, gosh, I've never had a hamstring before. This will be interesting. Like, what? Like, how long am I out? What's it mean? And they're like, well, we gotta get some imaging done on this one. This mm-hmm. might be worse. And it ended up being way worse. So it's not always apparent exactly in the moment exactly how bad it is.
Yeah, and it's interesting too that it's Wednesday that he's had this injury for 3 days now, and now here it's Wednesday, and I guess maybe did they get more information? Was there swelling it had to go down? I have no idea.
Yeah, so it could be something that they're just using the utmost caution, and they think he'll be fine in 3 weeks, but they want to be really sure and give it rest. Or it could be something more dire than that.
Nico Collins has been unquestionably one of the five best offensive players in football this season. He's leading the league in receiving yards, and that's with only having played a quarter and a half against the Bills on Sunday. He's leading the league in yards per game. Like, he is having an incredible season.
By the way, Sean, real quick, I just don't want to be too alarmist. The nature of his injury is unlikely to be the kind that I just described.
Yeah.
Like, it's really that happens to like linemen and water skiers.
Yeah.
Those are the only two people that injury happens to in non-adolescent boys. So yeah,
it can be anything. There's a wide range of what this could be. And look, D'Amico speaks to the media today. I don't know how much clarity we'll get. CJ speaks to the media today. I don't know how much he's. CJ's not going to go disclosing D'Amico's medical information. This may be one of those things where we're having to read CJ's body language. How prayerful is he about Nico and things like that?
Yeah,
you know?
How devastated are they?
Because you remember how CJ was openly emotionally moved when Tank broke his leg last year in that Denver game. Like, he wore it on his sleeve. So that'll be something to see today, because CJ's going to get asked about Nico for sure. So Nico has to miss the next four games. Here is what this schedule looks like. Seth, you tell me. If you think, I mean, obviously not having Nico moves the needle. Does it move the needle to the extent that this four-game stretch becomes more daunting, much more daunting? At New England this weekend, at Green Bay in week 7, home for Indianapolis. Now, I'll remind you, Nico is the Colts killer. This will be like the Texans facing the Colts back in the day and finding out that T.Y. Hilton went to the injured reserve list. Like, Colts fans are dancing in the streets right now with all of their cousins that Nico Collins is going to miss that game. And then the Jets game on Halloween night. Those are the four
Jets
games.
Game.
Patriots, Packers, Colts, Jets.
The Jets game is the one that would most concern me, just it being without Nico Collins. The Packers are a middling defense right now. The Patriots are a bad defense. The Jets, again, it's why it's a little bit odd and curious that the Jets fired Robert Saleh, whose defense is doing really, really well. They didn't lose their defensive coordinator, but the personnel is the same. So I'm guessing that that's going to be the biggest challenge.
Yeah, schedule-wise, the biggest concern for me, my feeling going into the season, I've said it many times on this show, has been that those three primetime games in a row, I think, are going to be the real decider on, is this going to be a Texans team that wins the division going away, or is this a team that's going to be battling for one of the three wild card spots in the AFC. That would be the Jets game that you just talked about, home for the Lions the following Sunday night on Sunday Night Football, and then at the Cowboys on Monday Night Football. The earliest that Nico Collins could be back would be for that Detroit game here on Sunday Night Football. So now the best case scenario, Seth, is, you know, as you just illustrated moments ago, that this could be anything from, hey, they're just taking extreme caution, to this could be really, really bad. We don't know. To me now, like, the best case scenario is they took a look at the schedule the next 4 weeks and said, okay, look, let's make sure you get well. Let's make sure we've got the roster set up to where we got enough bodies out there to play wide receiver. Let's get you well, because that Detroit, Dallas, and then two division games after that, Tennessee and Jacksonville, and it's a hamstring. Rather than sit here week to week and hamstring ourselves by not having a full complement of receivers out there, let's get you well, let's focus on getting you well, and then you come back for Detroit. That's the best case scenario right now.
Yeah, and honestly, right now, it heightens my focus on Joe Mixon. Because I said earlier in this show, if I had to choose right this moment for what is a bigger shot in the arm to the Texans offense, getting Nico Collins back or Joe Mixon back, and you can only get one, I think it's Joe Mixon. Just because he can really amp up and speed up the development of the run game, even if the offensive line doesn't get any better. And I do think they have made some improvements, but he makes the O-line right a lot. He makes bad blocks right because he's that good of a running back. So if I get Joe Mixon back, I'm not going to be as distraught this week, and check in with me after the game to see whether I was accurate in that or not.
Right.
But that's my one saving grace here, and not this being a complete dumpster fire that's going to send me into drinking again or anything like that.
Yeah, I think this is what we need to remind Texan fans is that this is a different Texans team than one that would have sustained an injury to its best receiver in previous years. And I would say, imagine, go back and think of like when Andre Johnson would get hurt. That's tough when your next guy is, no disrespect, is Kevin Walter, who's a solid pro. Any version of the Texans where DeAndre Hopkins was the main wide receiver, you lose DeAndre Hopkins and there's problems. I mean, that was DeAndre's availability might have been his greatest thing as a Texan, is that he never missed games.
Yeah.
This is a team that is built to withstand this. And I say that because while everybody got caught up in Stephon Diggs, me included, coming here and going, wow, look at this trio of wide receivers. Tank Dell is the best wide receiver three in the NFL. Take a look at these other trios. I truly feel and felt at the time, half the reason you go get Stephon Diggs, that dude is always available. He always answers the bell. Tank Dell, injury prone. Nico Collins, hate to say it, injury prone.
Yeah.
Stephon Diggs guarantees you that unless there's a severe rash of injuries with these guys, you're always going to have two top flight guys out there. It just so happens that for the next 4 weeks, knock on wood, it's Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell. And that's what we roll with,
And this is where the contract, this is why this contract made sense for both sides with the Texans and Nico Collins.
Yes.
It's that Nico, he had seen football mortality and knows what it's like when you're injured all the time. And like, okay, he's going to take a little less money than if he pushes it to free agency. But who knows what might happen this year. And we don't know. Maybe this is just a few games. But likewise for the Texans, if they had paid top of the market money for Nico Collins right now, like, it would be, you'd be saying, like, how could you do that to a guy that was injured like this? So it's still a good contract, and we won't know until you get to the end of the year and see how many games Nico Collins has played.
Yep, so that'll be something to keep an eye on today. D'Amico meets with the media shortly after 2 o'clock, CJ shortly after 3 o'clock.
Yeah, and you have, look, you've got Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell, and the big third part of that equation is, do you have Joe Mixon? If you can have Joe Mixon, then you still got... You've got better wide receivers than the Bills had or the Patriots have and a lot of other teams in the NFL. It's no excuse. It's honestly, if the Texans had gone up to this point in the season and Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell were their only two top receivers, they should still be scoring more points than they have been.
Yeah.
Like, there's stuff that's holding them back more so than the absence of Nico Collins right now.
Absolutely.
They just got to figure out and get right.
Really good point. This is what they're debating on TV right now, man. Breaking news, Nico Collins to IR. How soon until they pose this question on TV? Because I'm going to pose it to you right now because I got a lot of texters, Seth. We got a lot of texters suggesting this.
Davante Adams?
Do you make the phone call to the Raiders about Davante Adams?
That's when we might find out just how bad Nico Collins' hamstring injury is.
Yeah.
If he's out for the year, if they think he's probably out for the year, then they should be making a call to Davante Adams.
Yes. Yeah, it would be a little like in 2018. Remember Will Fuller tears up his knee? the week before the trade deadline, and next thing you know, Demaryius Thomas is a Houston Texan. Now, this is a higher level trade than Demaryius Thomas. Devontae Adams is still elite, elite.
Demaryius Thomas passed away, didn't he?
He did. Man. He did. Yeah, he did. Strange, huh? He did.
So, sorry, that's a little bit of a downer. And when we're already a little bit down, so yeah, this Devontae Adams. If I hear that the Texans inquired about Devontae Adams, I'm going to fear the absolute worst for Nico Collins.
And yet, can you imagine if Nico came back and you got just spread him out four wide with Tank, Stephon Diggs, Devontae Adams, and
Sean,
Nico Collins?
Sean, we've been through this thinking, have we not? Did we not just spend an entire offseason with people saying, oh, they're probably going to have three 1,500-yard receivers. Yeah. It's probably just as simple as that.
You could have four. That would be amazing.
Devontae Adams in line blocking.
Yeah,
as a tight end.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man, now I'm getting... I've gone from nervous to excited now. We'll see. John Lopez, who came in studio and broke the news to us.
Noted newsman.
Just the messenger.
Yeah, that's all.
How sweet. You know what? Yeah, thank you, John. I almost want the Texans to go after Devontae Adams just to take him away from Aaron Rodgers. How sweet would that be if the Jets fire Saleh for whatever reason, trying to placate Aaron Rodgers, who knows, and then the one big move they were going to make ends up. Because if I'm Devontae Adams and I'm looking at the Texans versus the Jets.
Oh, dude.
It's
not even close.
I'm blocking, and I know people are going to say, hey, yeah, but it's a trade. He doesn't have any choice in it. Yes, he does. Like, just like Brandon Ayuk put the kibosh on all the other trade offers that the 49ers had. He's got to endorse where he's going.
How we feeling, fellas? How we feeling?
That's a great question. I think that we're going to kind of have a therapy session.
Yeah, we are.
Just kind of like figure out
how
we're feeling.
I'm going to just sit here for 4 hours. Like, I'm going to go get a couch and put it right here and just lay on the couch.
Yeah, why don't we have a studio couch?
We should have a couch in here.
How about a real old reference here? from Animal House.
I'm here for it. Seth is here for it. We'll see.
I don't know about Reggie. Remember Animal House?
Of course.
Dude getting run over saying, remain calm.
Yeah. All is well.
All is well, remain calm. That's me right now.
Kevin Bacon.
That dude was Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yep. The inventor of bacon.
Yeah. 6 degrees of separation, Kevin Bacon.
So right now, in your mind, it's chaos because of Nico's injury.
Yes.
But you're standing there going, remain calm, all is well.
Yes, I am. And I don't know if that's the right call. It wasn't for Kevin Bacon. that's how I feel.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, this team, Seth and I were just talking, this team is at least equipped to deal with this.
Yes, that's why.
If this happened to, I'm sorry if I'm stealing your thunder.
No, that's why.
No. If this were one of the Texans teams where they have DeAndre Hopkins and nobody else, or Andre Johnson and nobody else, or just decent guys after Andre, then it's a big deal. You've still got Stephon Diggs, Tank Dell, Dalton Schultz, and hopefully Joe Mixon coming
this
back.
This is the problem, though. This is the problem. That defenses have said, all right, look, they got Nico Collins and Stephon Diggs and sometimes Tank Dell out there. We're gonna play it safe and play cover two. And if they kill us with the run game, then so be it. We can't get destroyed. And those defenses have come out and played that strategy and then halfway through the game been able to say, oh, these guys can't run the ball at all. But at least Nico Collins was still getting straight. Nico Collins was leading the league in receiving, even as his teams were trying to limit what Nico Collins could do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's no reason for teams to change their strategy at all until the Texans demonstrate that they can run the ball. Because they'll say, well, now that it's okay, we only got two guys to worry about, but the Texans can't run the ball, so we're just going to sit back there and take it easy and see what they can do.
Yep. Need Mixon back for sure. So we'll see. People are begging Casario on the text page to go trade for Devontae Adams.
See, you did this. I'm blaming you for this.
Why? What did I do?
You got excited.
Oh,
no, that was
four wide. That was genuine. I'm legitimately excited about that possibility. Good. Yeah, that was genuine.
No, I'm just lashing out at this point. I'm trying to find ways to cope
Sean.
With the news.
Yeah. Someone said we're going 1-3. I don't think so.
Really?
I don't think so. I think this.
They haven't been a good offense already. Like they were mediocre. They're mediocre offense.
No, for sure.
And they're 4-1. It's like the defense has done enough. The offense has done just enough. And I think that's where Joe Mixon's presence could counterbalance a lot of this.